That's happened in the last year. That's like the biggest upgrade, I think, in abortion care in England since 1967.
Wow.
Which is huge. It's absolutely huge. And if you think that that change happened in, for telemedical abortion, happened in March, and by June, I think half or just over half of all abortions were happening at home.
Welcome to Doing It with me, Hannah Witten, where we talk all things sex, relationships, dating, and our bodies. Hi folks, welcome back to Doing It. Before we get into today's episode, I wanted to mention some relevant things to the topics we discuss here that have been happening in the UK recently, and some small but important actionable things that you can do right now to help. And just FYI, I recorded these intros about a week before the episode goes live, so I'm sorry if this isn't super up to date, and feel free to share more resources and actions with us on social media. I know we have people from all over the world listening, but in the UK, the murder of Sarah Everard has been in the headlines. She was walking home one evening when she disappeared, and a police officer has been arrested, accused of her kidnap and murder. This is horrifying in itself, and women all over the UK, including myself, are feeling really shaken. And then there was the actions of the police at the vigil in Clapham Common, and now the government are trying to pass the Police Crime Sentencing and Courts Bill, which will give the police more power to squash protests and create tighter restrictions on protests. Never mind the fact that Clapham Common was a vigil, not a protest. So things that you can do, there will be links to all of this in the show notes, and again, sorry if this is out of date by the time you're listening, but I felt it was important to share, and defending our rights and standing up against sexism, gender-based violence, and police brutality is always important. So things you can do: sign the petition to protect our freedom to protest. You can write to your MP asking them to oppose the Police Crime Sentencing and Courts Bill. And you can fill out the government's open consultation on violence against women and girls. The call for evidence has recently been reopened in light of everything that is happening, and it closes on the 26th of March. So that is in 2 days' time from when this episode is going live. If you are a man, please listen to what women are saying. Please don't get defensive. Learn about our experiences and talk to other men about it. Call out sexist behavior in men's spaces when you hear it and see it. Okay, thank you for listening and taking action. Now, time for a smooth segue into today's episode and content warning for the topics of abortion and miscarriage. My guest today is the wonderful Zachi Brewster, who is an abortion doula and sex educator, and she does absolutely brilliant work providing holistic support for people before, during, and after abortions. In this episode, we talk about Zachi's experience of miscarriage and abortion, how she became an abortion doula, doula training, and the importance of taking care of yourself and setting boundaries in her work. We chat about how the context in which we learned about abortion in school was in RE lessons, which is religious education, and the importance of accessibility to abortion support, as people's needs vary depending on where they live and what kind of access is available to them. And as well as the personal lived experiences of abortion, we also had to get into what's going on at a societal level in terms of the stigma, the over-regulation and over-politicization, and what the impact of COVID has been on abortions in England. And Zachi gives us a passionate call to arms for advocacy and activism when it comes to abortion and reproductive rights. As usual, you can find more info and links to everything we talked about in this episode in the show notes over at doingitpodcast.co.uk. And please let us know what you think over on our Twitter or Instagram, which is at doingitpodcast. And without further ado, here is my conversation with Zachi Brewster. Zachi, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Thank you for having me. I'm well. I'm okay.
Good.
In these times.
Yeah. I feel like if you're doing okay, that's great. If you're not doing okay, like, that's also fine. You don't have to be.
Yeah. That's very true.
It's all good. I'm really interested in the work that you do, and I guess we can just start off by explaining it, because I've heard of doulas before, but I've never heard of an abortion doula. And I wondered, first of all, like what is a doula for anyone who doesn't know? And then what's an abortion doula? And like, how did you come about becoming one?
Great place to start. So a doula, as we know it now, is anyone or someone who supports others through the transitional periods in life. Generally, this is around birth. So there are a lot of birth doulas out there. And the support...
Yeah, that's the context I've heard it in. But I've not heard it being described as just like any transitional period.
That is what it means, but it has taken off through birth work, through pregnancy, and the postpartum period. And the majority of courses that you will find are for those types of support. And the support offered is not medical. It is informational, emotional, somatic, so practical and physical, and managing all of these aspects of these experiences. There are also death doulas, which is also something I'm interested in, but not, I guess, practiced in.
Is that for a person who knows that they're dying or for like their loved ones?
Yes, for people that maybe have illnesses and know they're going to die and also want someone there who's maybe less emotionally involved, but that can hold that space. Something that I learned actually when I was training to be a doula was that, you know, our work is intimate, but it's not personal. And I guess that's the role that we hold, an intimacy with the experience, with the person, but being able to witness the emotion without falling into the emotional aspect of the experience itself, I guess. Yeah.
Because there's no fear that whatever they do or say, you would take personally and like hold against them in any way. Like that's not what the relationship is.
No, I mean, there are boundaries involved. So I also do state if I have my own boundaries. So for example, I've never not worked with someone, but of course, if someone was racist or for any other reason I felt I couldn't work with them, then I also wouldn't hesitate to, because to care for someone, you also have to care for yourself. I do state my boundaries are very clear, and I also invite others, the people that I work with, to also state their boundaries as well. So from if I'm asking a question that you don't want to answer, that's fine, you don't have to. And also, if you ask me a question that I don't want to answer, or it's not the right moment to answer, I won't answer. So things like that, because I think it's, especially with the work I do in supporting people around abortions, there is a lot of self-inquiry, digging, emotional inquiry as well. And it's not always easy.
Yeah.
For the most part, it is necessary. So in line with that, I am an abortion doula. I think you also asked me, how did I get there? So I actually, an abortion doula, there are, from what I've seen, there are abortion doulas that do different things. So for example, if we jump across the pond, there are abortion doulas that are focused on accessibility, for example.
So helping someone actually get access to abortion, if that's what they want.
Yeah. And I did an abortion course for the first time. I mean, I've been an abortion doula for 4 years, and I did my first abortion course, which may sound awful, but I will explain it. I did my first abortion course last summer with Alliance for Choice. And it was really interesting because my work has focused mostly, I've worked with people mostly in England, and a few people around Europe, so the Netherlands, Italy, and also Greece. And I've worked with people in countries where accessibility in terms of legality is not necessarily the issue. I've worked with them because of care. I've worked with them because they needed a space to debrief or to speak to someone or to, after years, to process their experience as well. So I've worked with people from before they're planning to have an abortion, or just as they're planning to have an abortion, to a week after they've had an abortion, to 5 years or 10 years after they've had their abortion.
Wow.
And my work, as I said, is less about accessibility, but more about the emotional side of things and supporting someone through that. If we look across the pond, a bigger pond, let's say, to the States, abortion doulas are chaperones. A lot of their work is focused around chaperoning people from home to clinics or within the clinics itself, which is something that is not seen in England and is not, I don't think it's allowed. I've tried, I guess, to do that. Someone's asked me to go, not chaperoning, but being with them in the clinic, and it wasn't allowed. Whereas in the States, you have some abortion clinics that the doulas work in the clinics. It's not that the client or the person contacts the doula separately. The doulas are part of the clinic.
Oh, I see.
So I don't know if I explained that well, in the sense that there are very different types of abortion doulas based on the country that they're in and the space that they're in. But I would say, I think anyone, it just goes also to show that, you know, being an abortion doula is not one thing. It's many things. And in short, it's meeting the needs of people that need your support when there is not always that support available, especially around abortions. So yeah, that's what I do.
Yeah, that makes sense, because I mean, everyone's needs are different, even if, you know, they're from the same country and like have very similar experiences. Because they're a different person, they will need a different type of support. But then, like you said, in different countries, there's different laws and accessibility when it comes to abortion. So those needs will also be really different. How did you become an abortion doula? What made you want to do that? And like, how did you, I'm really interested in the training as well, like how that works.
So I get that question a lot. So if I start with how or why or what inspired me, I guess.
Why is a great way to start.
So I didn't actually have it much to do with reproductive health, I guess. I studied food. I loved food from when I was a teenager. I thought I was going to become a chef.
Multi-talented.
I should caveat that by saying I'm not the world's best cook, but my food hasn't hurt anybody to date. So it's definitely passable and edible.
I mean, winner. Great.
So I finished my undergrad and then I fell pregnant, and I was not expecting that. That was not, as with many people, that's not part of your life. That's not part of the life plan. And I was umming and ahhing at what to do. I wasn't in England. I was studying abroad. I wasn't really in a great place in my relationship. And I was like, I actually don't know what I want to do. I knew that I didn't want to parent at that time. But because of the stigma, I was also too scared to make a choice.
Just kind of like paralyzed, just being like, well, if I just don't make a decision, we'll see what happens.
Like literally that was me. I was like, I know what I want to do, but I'm not going to make a choice. I really almost was just like, let me just see what happens the next few weeks. And what did happen was that I ended up having a miscarriage, which is when the pregnancy stops, but you're still pregnant and you don't necessarily realize, or the fetus stops growing. And I had a tiny bit of spotting, so light bleeding. And I went to the hospital and they measured the fetus and they were like, it hasn't grown in like 3-4 weeks or something. And then they gave me two options. They were like, okay, it's likely that at some point, possibly in the next week or two, it will come out by itself. But there's also a risk that it won't. And so you can choose to have a medical abortion. Which is the pill to get it out now. Which is what I chose, because I was like, I can't wait for like an unexpected or like a random, I just can't wait. I don't want to wait. And so I had the pills, and it has been to date the most excruciating pain I've ever been in. At the time, no one explained that to me. Now, it does make sense that abortions, especially that they're painful, because they start contractions and they start a release. And so, yes, there will be blood, and yes, the bleeding will be heavy because you're shedding the lining of your womb that hasn't shed in however many weeks that you've been pregnant. So, and you've also been growing pregnancy tissue. And also, to help with that, your womb does have to contract. There, as with your period, as when you're in a full-term labor, let's say, there are contractions. And so the pain is there. And I've heard from someone that's given birth and had an abortion. And of course, the pain is, you know, different for everybody, but they said that their abortion was more painful than their birth.
Wow.
But that is just also one person, and this is just me.
Yeah.
But what I will say is that at least where I was and the care that I had, I was not told the extent of the pain that I could feel. So it was a shock.
Mm.
And I also was not told the extent of blood that I probably should have been prepared for, and I wasn't very prepared for.
Even just on a practical level, you've got to be prepared for that.
Yeah, I had to, at some point when it really kicked in, I had to just sit on the toilet because I was like, I can't keep changing. Like, it was just almost, it was a lot. And then, sorry, that was a really long introduction to why I became an abortion doula.
No, it's all good.
I guess because of that experience. And then afterwards, the bleeding carried on, but to a lesser extent. I think the shock of, first of all, getting pregnant, being pregnant, not being pregnant, the abortion, and a complete lack of care afterwards. I then went into a deep depression for a few months, and then I distracted myself by going back to study. And then it wasn't till 2 years later that I was like, wow, that was a ride that you went on. And you're really just feeling better, I guess, air quotes, now. And then my thought turned to, well, you can't have been the only one. And
I've never thought about that before, where you just kind of like, whether it is a miscarriage and then you have to kind of still kind of do an abortion, or if it is just an abortion, just the fact that you're kind of like, it happens and then you're just sent home and it's just like, goodbye.
So this is also this, like, I'm going to jump forwards to now, to why I've also created Doppo, but it's also because, and it sounds a bit backwards, but abortion care provision as it stands now, for the most part, is pregnancy focused, and it doesn't focus on the person.
Right.
Of course, it makes sense that we have a healthcare practice where, you know, I guess abortion is there to release pregnancies, if we put it like that. But for many people, that experience doesn't stop there. And so the care itself shouldn't stop there.
Yeah. Like, once the pregnancy is over. Yeah.
And so I guess with Doppo, our aim is to both educate from like age appropriate RSE lessons in school, so that if during a lifetime you do encounter this, you know, you also have some tools, some knowledge. It's not, maybe it's less of a shock, but also to support people before, during and after their, not to take away from the medical side of things, but to support that and to add an extra layer, I guess, of care that is currently not there. So now jumping back again, there were no abortion courses. And actually, I didn't think that that's what I wanted to do. I was like, I just want to help people that are pregnant. And the cheapest way for me to do that, because I did want to retrain as a midwife, but I was like, you really can't afford that now, you're paying off your student loan and you just did a master's. So maybe now is not the best time to do another undergrad. I met a midwife and she said to me, you can affect more change out of the system than joining the system, so go and be a doula. So I trained to be a doula. I did a couple of doula courses. One was a week long, one was 9 months long.
Is it 9 months long on purpose? That feels symbolic.
It did feel really symbolic, and it was actually wonderful training. It was with two women called Samara and Fiona, and every few weeks I went to Wales. It was a sacred birthing doula course, I think. And basic midwifery training. Something like that. I will find maybe the proper name for it. I'm so bad with names.
We can pop it in the show notes.
Perfect. Their course was wonderful because it opened, I guess, what many doula courses are, which is, again, very focused on birth, on the postpartum period, but of full-term pregnancies. And theirs opened up an extra element of, yes, the emotional side of things, but also you as a practitioner, how do you use your gifts, your interests, your skills that you have to better the lives of birthing people? And it was actually through that experience that I was like, okay, I'm going to be a full spectrum doula. So I'll open it to everyone. I'll charge the birth clients and I will offer people that are coming to me for miscarriage or abortion support for free. And when I started, everyone that came to me was for abortion and miscarriage support. So I actually have done no traditional birth work, I thought. And I was like, well, this is strange. So yeah, it really affirmed that people really needed this.
Yeah.
But of course, I wasn't charging and I was doing this whilst having a full-time job. And also with the nature of abortions, I was like speaking to people at 6 in the morning or 11 o'clock at night, because that's when partners weren't around or when children weren't around or they had a moment themselves. And it really took a toll on me because I also, and this is why I made the point of boundaries at the beginning, I hadn't learned to set my own. I hadn't found a pattern as well that worked with me and worked with people. And this is something that came over time.
Because it's really intense work.
Yeah, it can be. And this is why boundaries are extremely, extremely important. And I think a large part of being a doula, which maybe doesn't occur to people, is taking care of yourself. Like a huge, huge part. If you're not sure how to take care of yourself, or you're not sure also about your needs, I mean, boundary setting is a constant, it's a constant learning. It's not that you learn it once and then you're great at it. Like,
yeah.
But I would say you have to be willing to flex your boundary muscle. If not, you'll be depleted and you will have nothing to give. So a large part of doula work is learning to set boundaries and taking care of yourself.
I wanted to come back to something that you said about DOPPO and about wanting to do like RSE in schools. And it made me think about how when abortion was talked about when I was in secondary school, it wasn't through the sex ed classes we were having. It was in religious education. It was in RE.
Yes.
And just even thinking about that now, I'm like, oh, wow, we're not teaching about abortion in a way that is like, here's the information. We're teaching about it in a way like, let's debate the values of this.
Yes, exactly. And this is a huge, huge problem. And
yeah,
it's a huge disservice as well, because we know that yes, we do need to have conversations about accessibility. We do need to have conversations that are political about the legalities, but more restrictive abortion laws don't stop the number of abortions that happen. They will stop the number of safe abortions that happen, but not the number of abortions. And in fact, it will be even harder to count the numbers. And there's a risk that you'll be counting lives, like bodies, because of people. If someone wants an abortion, if someone doesn't want to parent, they will find a way, which is their right to. It's their body and their future. And so this is also why we support, of course, we're pro-choice. We support the work of the many campaigners that have come before us and will, thankfully, that we also hope to be working alongside. But our focus, I guess, at DOPPO is people. And we stated on our website, people will have abortions. However they have them, we are there to support them. We're not here to debate whether they should or they shouldn't. We are here to support them. Our focus is people.
Mm.
And yeah, that's what we're here for.
So can you briefly explain what DOPPO is? Because you've like just launched it. Congrats. And yeah, tell us a bit about it.
So DOPPO is a community space that will be for now on Instagram and workshops and events that we build around that, focusing on improving abortion care and abortion education. So through DocBot, I will be continuing my one-to-one support with my doula clients, so people that need support before, during, and after their abortions. We're also looking at creating drop-in group sessions, so very small, select brave spaces for people that want to connect maybe once a month or just come to one and not have regular sessions with me. And we're also looking at education and training, so creating RSE lessons, going into schools, working with community organizations as well, hopefully alongside some abortion clinics too. And later this year we will be launching our abortion doula training, which people have been asking me about since last summer. But guys, I have to say, it is in the pipeline. We are working on all of these things, which is a lot of work, but
yeah,
it's also very exciting.
Yeah, it's so exciting. And I think it's really cool that you've kind of, you've seen this need, and obviously it's like come from a place of personal experience as well. So you really know it and understand that, you know, there are so many people that just aren't being catered for. And there really is this piece missing in our healthcare. So yeah, well done. Good work. Yeah. I wanted to ask, what is one thing that you wish everybody knew about abortion and miscarriage or miscarriage?
That they're probably more common than you think. I think the stats for miscarriage are around 1 in 4. Birthing people or women. And around for abortion, it's 1 in 3. Of course, I have to say that I will caveat this, that the stats are focused on women, but we do know that trans and non-binary people do have abortions as well. So 1 in 3 women in England will have an abortion by the age of 45. And in terms of the trans community, I think this stat is from the US, 3% of the trans community will have an abortion or need abortion support at some point. And in the UK, in England and Wales, I think we had the highest number of abortions since, I think it's the 1967 Abortions Act. And in 2019, that was over 207,000 abortions in that year. Last year, it was slightly higher, I think. And I know some people will be like, oh, but it's increasing. That's a really bad thing. But actually, that's a really good thing, because it means that people are accessing healthcare that is safe, medically safe. And that's not to say, I know there's people like Women on Waves, where you can order, who do provide increased accessibility by providing pills online.
Yeah, because since the first lockdown, didn't they make this, because you have to take 2 pills, didn't they make the second one available for you to be able to take at home?
Yes.
So, and that's happened in the last year.
That's like the biggest upgrade, I think, in abortion care in England since 1967.
Wow.
Which is huge. It's absolutely huge. And if you think that change happened in, for telemedical abortion, happened in March, and by June, I think half or just over half of all abortions were happening at home. And that's like wonderful, because it's improved autonomy, it's improved accessibility, it's reduced waiting times. People can have this experience in the comfort of their own homes. It's not like they're in a clinic and taking pills and, you know, if they're on the bus on their ride home and bleeding starts or cramping starts, or if they're living somewhere rural, for example, and they're having to drive and that experience is starting in the car on the way home, you know, that's really uncomfortable.
It's obviously it's a different thing, but when I got my coil put in, like, I almost didn't make it home on the tube because the pain, like, kicked in when I was, like, halfway home. It was horrendous.
Yeah. I mean, there's just been the government consultation, which closed last week. I was going to say last year, but last week. and this was a public consultation on whether or not, I guess, this telemedic telemedical abortion should remain or not. I'm really hoping it does.
I didn't realize there was a consultation. Oh no, I really hope it does as well.
It needs to.
Yeah. It makes me think as well, like, if obviously it was COVID and lockdown and everything that made it necessary because they didn't want too many people like in hospitals and in clinics, and allowing people to do that at home like freed up that space and meant people weren't traveling and stuff. But then it makes me think, like, it was before, like, why didn't this happen before? Like, it wasn't the case that you couldn't do it, it was that you didn't want to.
Yes,
make exactly. it available.
Exactly. And abortion, I will also look for these stats for the show notes as well. But the abortion pill, when taken with the guidance that abortion care providers provide, it is safer statistically than Viagra, aspirin, getting a wisdom tooth out.
Wow.
And it's so much more regulated than all of these other things. Because of the stigma, it is over politicized, I guess, for an area of healthcare. Over-regulated, I think, is a better word. Also think that it's over-politicized completely as well, especially with decision makers who...
It doesn't personally affect.
And it's more about control than actual any form of care.
And this false sense of morality.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But that's a discussion that will never end if we also embark on that route.
It feels like it should have ended centuries ago.
Yes. Yeah.
But we're still having it.
So the way I also look at it, and I think many people, the majority of people look at it, is that it is just a reproductive experience. The same way we look at menopause, the same way we look at having periods, the need for abortion has always been there. This, like the same way we look at pregnancy or support around pregnancy, it is an experience that has always existed centuries ago and will always exist. And we also have to remember that abortions are healthcare, and abortions are not always about choice. Abortions are there, are an important part of healthcare, because sometimes it's about, releasing a pregnancy for whatever reason. So this is also something we highlight on Dopo, that, you know, we support all abortion experiences. There's no good, bad, acceptable or unacceptable abortion. Like, people have abortions, people need abortions, and there should be support for that. And I mean, I would love if the government really took on our manifesto, because I think we could potentially have a great abortion, and not just an abortion system, but reproductive health system, which needs the whole shake-up as well, you know, putting autonomy back into people's hands. That's what we need. Allowing people to become the experts of their body, become the experts of their experience, feel seen, feel safe, feel, you know, not stigmatized, and feel supported. I've had since we launched, which was like 3 or 4 days ago, the number of messages I've had from people, like, I only finished responding to messages that I received 3 days ago yesterday, and also because I sat down for a few hours to like get through them, both on Instagram and by email, of people that are also have shared experiences from 20 years ago, 15 years ago, 10 years ago, who were like, who have just said to me, I don't know what I can do, but I want to help, because I remember when I went through this, I didn't want to be alone, and I don't want anyone who goes through this now to be alone. So what can I do?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my gosh.
Wow, that's amazing.
I'm like building a mini movement or army of people that are like, tell me what I can do, I can help.
So it's rally the troops.
Rally the troops, because this is also what we need. Like, we all know someone that's had, we all know at least one person that's had an abortion. Mm-hmm. And whether you know that they've had it or not is irrelevant. But also the stigma that they're carrying.
That's a really good point, actually.
For many people, it doesn't leave. Also because the stigma is held by society. It's not that person feels stigma. It's because also we perpetuate it. as a societal group.
Yeah.
As individuals and as collectives and movements, there are many of us that are trying to shift that through different ways. And this is like by welcoming people to talk about it on a podcast or sharing our stories. Or there are some really great abortion activists who are doing activism in really creative ways. Like there's an abortion embroiderer, is that the word? And they embroider like abortion slogans and abortion support. And then they sell the pieces. There's people that share stories. There's people that abortion nurses that share information. And I guess this is a message to anyone who's listening, who's like, I want to, how can I help? Mm. If you have a platform, share the mic or allow people who are doing this work to share their stories. If you have a platform, also direct them to donate to funds or people working within accessibility or working in providing care, support, pills. If you're an artist, you know, auction something off or create a wonderful piece of abortion art. There are so many ways. If you're a chef and you want to bake a cake, bake abortion cakes and yes. sell them and donate money.
I've seen someone do like cakes with like icing slogans on them as well. Like the embroidery, but with like slogans on cakes.
There are many ways. That just as there are many ways to be an abortion doula, there are many ways to
be an advocate,
share your voice. And, you know, be an activist and be counted and be heard. And we will share, I launched slightly after, there are public discussions going on, like there was just the government consultation, not always, but when those calls come out, there's a load of support, like BPAS, the folks from Abortion Book Club, shared like a list of how you can like to support your responses to these things. So there is so much going on.
And of course, so many amazing resources. But
there are already things you can do. Volunteering with a local group in your area, looking at your local abortion clinics. There are also many, I know lobbying, like outside of abortion clinics is also a problem. So people warning and shielding people that are going in, although that is, of course, maybe less so during COVID, but there are multiple ways to get involved. So please don't feel small and please use whatever tools you have, whatever creativity, whatever skills you have to get involved, because you won't be alone, for sure.
Yeah, I love that call to arms. I think it's so important. I've had some questions from people on our Instagram, and I'll try and put as many of them to you as possible. Somebody asked, what kind of abortion access / miscarriage support is there for AFAB people who aren't women?
This is a wonderful question. There is not much, if I'm being honest. At least I haven't found any. And even for people that identify as women, if I look at my experience, for example, the support I found was very focused on you're married, you're trying to actively conceive, and you're having multiple miscarriages. How can we support you? When actually the support needed was you've had a miscarriage or you've had an abortion, let's just be here for you and you tell us what you need. So I know that some clinics do offer counselling, although some of that counselling can be very grief focused rather than being directed by the person. But yeah, this is also what we're trying to change, not just through the services we offer, but supporting service providers to make their services more inclusive, to recognise that it's not just women, that it's not just women that need support, that it's not just a choice issue, that it's not about the loss of the chance of parenthood, but it's just that people want to be seen, they want to be supported. So yes, I'm sorry that you haven't found that support.
But hopefully things are getting better and the support that is out there is becoming more inclusive as well. Somebody asked, thoughts on having an abortion in a committed relationship because it's just not the right time?
That is a perfect reason to have an abortion. Just because you're in a committed relationship, you don't have to parent. Your relationship status has nothing to do with whether you want to parent or not. And so if it's not the right time for you, have an abortion.
And I think it goes back to what you were saying before about that feeling of there being good abortions, there being bad abortions. And just, and there doesn't have to be like a reason behind it. You just not wanting to be pregnant and not wanting to parent. Like, even if you, like, no matter how deep you search, if you still can't like figure out why you feel that way, but you know, you're just like, I just don't want to.
Yeah.
Like that's completely fine.
That's a more than valid reason. And I say that, and also at the same time, you shouldn't have to validate your reason for having an abortion. If you want one, you should have one. This is also why I was saying as well that the stigma is societal, because we hold stigma, abortion stigma, as well without realizing it. Even if we're pro-choice, we agree that even for ourselves, it's like, well, I agree with everyone having an abortion, but if it comes to me, I would feel so bad if I had to do that for myself.
Yeah, I hear that a lot. Like, oh, I'm pro-choice, but I could never do
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Which is a valid experience, obviously, but it is interesting to hear that coming up a lot.
And I realized that was my experience. That's why I was like, I know I don't want to do this, but I also don't want to make the choice. And a lot of us hold that or have held that, and it is stigma. So something when I'm working with people, I always try and, you know, get them to think, okay, when was the first time you heard about abortion? Because for many people, the first time they heard about abortion is what stuck to them. So if it was their parent or their friends being like, that is such a bad thing to do. Some people have internalized that. And so when it comes to their abortion, it's like, I've done such a bad thing. And I sort of work with people to be like, is this your belief or a belief you're holding from someone that you love and respect in your life that you've adopted that from and internalized? And like getting all of us, whether we're having an abortion or not, also should be doing that work of what do I truly believe and why do I truly believe this and why do I believe this? And is it actually me or is it stigma? And how can I break down my own stigma? How can I break down my own, not even doubts, but my own biases around this.
I love me some self-interrogation.
it's important. And that's also something that in the doula course that we have developed, that's a huge part of it. Before even starting to think about supporting other people, it is okay, where do you stand? What are your values? What are your biases? Because if they come up when you're supporting someone, you won't fully be able to support them. Or you will, but with also a jaded view. The support out there has to be unbiased. It has to be non-judgmental. Because people already going through it bring that upon themselves. And you having that as well is not helping the situation. So in short, if you want to have an abortion, have an abortion. And this also doesn't mean that you can't parent later on down the line. Your abortion today, I should say that also to anyone listening, your abortion today does not affect you being able to parent further down the line. It's not a now or never.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, do what you've got to do now. Take care of yourself. It is also self-care. Abortions are self-care and self-care should be prioritized.
Yeah. Oh, if only capitalism also thought that abortions were self-care, then we'd just be marketed left, right and center. Wouldn't that be great? Somebody asked, has the strengthening of the anti-abortion movement in recent years had an impact on how your clients feel about having an abortion? Which I think is interesting. Have you seen the impact of that?
I think it's strengthened in the sense that people are more vocal and also able to share their opinions and their views and share them quite widely and quite quickly. It also doesn't help that we have a Tory government who has cut funding and reduced funding for sexually reproductive healthcare these past 10 years. Because I've been doing this, I guess, for the past 4 years, I'm not sure how it was before. And I had my abortion now abortion/miscarriage to your question before. I'm not sure what it was. It was both, maybe. 8 years ago. I haven't, I guess, followed it since the last 4 years. But I think that when I'm working one-to-one with someone, the problems that have existed or the problems that arise or the trauma connected to something based on society or law or accessibility are similar, at least in an English setting, as they were maybe 10 years ago. And so the anti-choice, anti-abortion movement on a personal level maybe hasn't affected clients one-to-one, but on a social level, maybe that impact is felt a little more, especially also with people stating that they are pro-choice or, you know, talking more openly or counteracting that by, as we said, platforms like Shout Your Abortion that I love, that is a platform where you can submit your abortion story and they share snippets and they share the story. And that is also a great way of counteracting those opposing voices. I think by nature of the times we're living in, there is obviously people can shout louder and share their voices a lot louder. Our government doesn't help, but also at least where I focus my energy as well, I see a lot of hope.
Mm.
And I don't think it's blind hope. We are banding together. We are also, you know, finding ways of all of us maybe doing different things, but working towards a greater good.
Yeah. And I think that's a really lovely note to end it on. And before we say goodbye, where can people find you online? Where can they find Doppo? Give your work a plug, a well-deserved plug.
So you can visit the Doppo website. We are doppo.com. You can follow us on Instagram at Doppo Support. Doppo is D-O-P-O, by the way.
I was just going to say, like, you just got a four-letter domain, .com. That's incredible.
No, but we are Doppo. So it's
Doppo, right.
All attached, .com. I would have loved Doppo.com, but...
Alas.
Taken.
We are Doppo.com, got it.
And Doppo Support. At Doppo Support on Instagram, and you can find me at zaz.brew on Instagram as well.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story with us and sharing what you do and that call to arms as well. It is very much appreciated.
Good. Wonderful. Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much, and thank you all for listening. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to Doing It. If you enjoyed it, I would really appreciate it if you left a rating and a review. You can find show notes at doingitpodcast.co.uk, and do go follow us on social media, and I'll catch you in the next episode. Bye. This was a Global Original podcast.